cantai farfallone amoroso, notte giorno intorno girando, delle belle turbando in riposo, narcisetto a dolcino d'amor. Delle belle turbando in riposo, narcisetto a dolcino d'amor. Cherubino alla vittoria, alla gloria militar, cherubino alla vittoria, alla gloria militar, alla gloria militar, alla gloria militar.
So ends Act I of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's opera Le Nozze di Figaro. In spite of Figaro's urgings, Cherubino does not go off to any gloria militar. He stays around Count Almaviva's house to cause more trouble in the remaining three acts. My name is Nicholas Ivor Martin. I'm the Director of Operations of Lyric Opera of Chicago, and today I'm going to speak to you about Mozart's revolutionary little gem. The excerpts on this commentary are taken from an EMI Classics recording featuring Thomas Allen as Figaro, Kathleen Battle as Susanna, Jorma Heininen as Count Almaviva, Margaret Price as the Countess, and Anne Murray as Cherubino. Riccardo Muti conducts the chorus and orchestra of the Vienna Philharmonic, and very special thanks to EMI for providing these excerpts. The opera Figaro had three parents, all men, and what is equally remarkable for the tempestuous 18th century, not a one of them seems to have seen much more military service than Cherubino. The original play, written by Father Number One, the French playwright Pierre-Augustin Caron de Beaumarchais, premiered in 1784 as a sequel to his 1775 hit play The Barber of Seville. Barber opened 1 year before the American colonies revolted against Great Britain, dragging the French into yet another war with England. Father Number Two was the opera's librettist, Lorenzo da Ponte. Da Ponte was a Venetian Jew who converted to Roman Catholicism along with his widowed father and two brothers so that his father could marry his 18-year-old girlfriend. Lorenzo was 14 at the time, but he was a quick study. Or not. Some years later, the poet got himself banished from his hometown by running afoul of his mistress's husband. Leaving Venice, da Ponte ended up in Vienna, which was where he met Father Number Three, the aspiring young composer Mozart. Figaro was the first Mozart-da Ponte collaboration, a partnership that would lead to Don Giovanni in 1787 and Così fan tutte in 1790. If none of the men most responsible for the opera was a soldier, they did share other traits. Beaumarchais and da Ponte were both Renaissance men. The playwright had first come to fame for inventing an improved pocket watch, and he went on to become a musician, a spy, a publisher, and a politician. Da Ponte was never an arms dealer, Beaumarchais was that too, but he was at various points a greengrocer, an Italian teacher, and a priest, in addition to being a poet. He ended up in New York, where he became the first faculty member at Columbia University to be born a Jew and also the first to be ordained as a priest. He may still be the only faculty member to have done both. Beaumarchais and da Ponte shared another trait. The names by which they went down to history were not the names they were born with. Da Ponte was born Emanuele Conegliano, but he adopted the name of the priest who baptized him when he converted. Beaumarchais was born Pierre-Augustin Caron. He made up the Beaumarchais part by corrupting the name of the property inherited by one of his three wives. If you have not put it together yet, what all three men shared most was that all three were troublemakers and scamps. Beaumarchais spent a good deal of time and effort climbing the social ladder in Paris. He married well, twice, both women dying in somewhat mysterious circumstances. The French government sent him to England as a spy to steal a pamphlet attacking Marie Antoinette. Beaumarchais returned wounded and without the pamphlet. He explained that he had chased the author to Germany and taken the pamphlet from him after a fight, only to lose it subsequently to a bunch of marauding brigands. The doctor who examined Beaumarchais had a different story to tell. The wounds, he believed, were self-inflicted. No sooner had Beaumarchais gotten himself reasonably well established in Paris than along came the French Revolution to turn everything upside down. Now he was endearing himself to the new government by buying rifles for the Revolutionary Army. I've already mentioned how Da Ponte got himself exiled from Venice for bad behavior. Mozart's offenses were neither political nor sexual. They were scatological, and you can read them yourself if you get a good translation of his letters. All three men also had a tendency to stick their fingers in the eye of authority. Speaking about Beaumarchais and his scandalous plays, no less a drama critic than Napoleon Bonaparte remarked that, quote, "If I had been a king, a man such as he would have been locked up. The Marriage of Figaro is already the revolution in action," unquote. Mind you, Bonaparte was in favor of revolution, since that was what brought him to power. But on the subversiveness of the Beaumarchais play, he saw eye to eye with the king in question, Louis XVI. Louis XVI said he would as soon knock down the Bastille as allow Figaro to be put on stage. He was being sarcastic, not knowing that he would live to see both events and be beheaded shortly thereafter. Particularly incendiary in the Beaumarchais play was a speech in which Figaro says to the Count, "Because you are a great noble, you think you are a great genius. Nobility, a fortune, a rank, appointments to office, all this makes a man so proud. What did you do to earn all of it? You took the trouble to get born, nothing more. Moreover, you are really a pretty ordinary fellow." Mozart and Da Ponte were equally daring, if a bit more subtle. The Figaro aria that I opened the commentary with is an excellent case in point. Figaro is having fun telling Cherubino that his life of ease is over, which gives Figaro every reason to emphasize the danger and discomfort of life in the army. "Soldiering," he says, "is a life of slogging through mud and snow, suffering under a burning sun, and getting shot at." Even the accoutrements become objects of fun to Da Ponte, who doesn't seem to be sure what army Cherubino is joining. Quote, "Scioppo in spalla, sciabla al fianco, collo dritto, muso franco, un gran casco, un gran turbante, molto onor, poco cantante." A gun at your shoulder, a sword at your side, head held high, bold of face, a great helmet or a big turban, plenty of honor, but not much money. Musically, Mozart is right there with his collaborators, breaking conventions and ridiculing authority. After an act filled with musical complexity and sophistication, Figaro's aria is jarringly simple. The catchy square melody follows the basic rondo form, with little of the chromatic complexity we've heard before. Military fanfares complete the picture of military life as fast, direct, and simple, lacking the subtle shades of civilian life. But even more surprising is the fact that the act ends with an aria. We expect a chorus, or at least an ensemble. Instead, the curtain comes down with Figaro marching Cherubino off to his fate. To find out whether or not Cherubino deserves what's about to happen to him, we have to go back to the beginning of the opera.